And welcome back to the open line portion of Coast to Coast. Nothing like it on a Friday night into Saturday morning. And we'll be back with your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Gosh, fast year. I'll be going back to St. Louis next week. We'll be doing Ghost to Ghost out of the cave there. And I'm going to just hang for Thanksgiving and Christmas. A little bit of New Year's. We'll be on the air all that time. And then we'll be coming back to Los Angeles again. And 2019 will be underway. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller Tom in Spring Valley, California is with us. Hey, Thomas, good morning.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
You were talking about S&H Green Stamp.
Yeah.
Do you remember their competitor?
Was it a gold stamp or something?
No, blue chip stamps.
I don't remember those.
Oh, they were just like S&H, and they were given out at, Safeway used to give us the S&H Green stamps, and then other places gave blue chip stamps. And they were both the same kind of places. You could take them and go in and get the things you wanted at these stores. And then, if you really want to go back a little bit, at one time you could get coupons off of Raleigh Cigarettes, and they were a division of Brown & Williamson, and Brown & Williamson had coupons.
Jeez.
His mama used to save those, and she'd make up little packets like of 100 and tie them up with strings, and then she could trade those in for gifts too.
That's amazing. How time has passed, huh?
Well, that's how they hooked everybody on cigarettes.
That's a good point. Yep.
And here's the other thing I wanted to tell you about. I wanted to tell you about things I couldn't believe I saw. I-64, I'm going down. I was driving over the road truck. I did that for 18 years. And I'm going down I-64 down the hill into Richmond. And this car comes alongside me, George. The girl was just, Nick was his Jaybird. And I just couldn't believe what I saw. I couldn't believe it. And then... There was a time when I was driving through your city of St. Louis on I-44, and there was a black car that came up alongside me. There was a big truck in the far left lane, and I was in the right-hand lane. And she split the difference between us, and she turned her wheel, and I T-boned her.
Oh, God.
Now, wait, here's the funny thing, George. I T-boned her, and I called the police, and I called the fire engine and all that because I was sure I'd killed her passenger.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Well, we called the sheriff, and we called the police, and they were on the way, and the fire truck showed up, and the car took off.
It took off?
Yes, it took off, leaving a trail of parts all the way.
Jeez, did they catch him?
Yes, and The fire engine showed up and said, "Where are the people?" I said, "They went down the road, follow that trail apart."
Why would they take off unless they were hiding something?
They were probably using drugs or something.
Yeah, or they stole the car.
This car was pretty torn up to begin with, but I couldn't believe that the lady just put it in gear and went down the road.
That's a great story. Hey, Tom, thanks. Appreciate that. Next up, let's go to Angela in Fairfield, Ohio. Hello, Angela.
Good morning, George.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I was listening to Tucker Carlson of the Fox News Channel last night, and he had a far-left liberal female guest on that said a group of evil witches were going to get together.
They're after
in
Kavanaugh.
Brooklyn, New York this month. I don't remember the date. They did give a date, and I don't remember. I don't have a computer to check it out. But anyway, they're going to put a hex on Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I would like to ask the good witches listening right now to cast a spell to block the hex.
Not a bad idea. The guy's been sworn in. He's our justice. Let's give him a chance to do what he does.
I agree 100%, and I listened to both of them, and the lady came across as mentally imbalanced to me,
But she's,
her hair
but,
was a
but,
mess.
But they both seem to be
it
telling the truth.
Falling in her face, her hair kept falling in her face. She just looked disheveled. And I, you know, she just, I think she has a mental problem.
Well, we don't know that, but, you know, they both came across as telling the truth. They didn't come across as bad people. And it was just a horrible situation, though. Just horrible.
You know? Mixed up with someone else.
Yeah, that could be. That could very well be. Or, you know, if he did anything, he should have said, look, I was 17 years old, and I was with my buddies, and I didn't do anything bad. I just, you know, was too aggressive, and I'm sorry if he did. But he didn't. You know, he said he did not. Final text and tweet for the night. What do we have, Thomas?
You think Kavanaugh read that story about the witches?
Oh, I'm sure he has. Somebody's got it to him.
Probably. This one from Justin in Fort Myers, Florida. Beat this one, George. A year and a half ago, I was in the bank, and it got robbed. The manager had a gun and disarmed the robber. Now, that was something I can't believe I saw.
The manager had a gun and disarmed the robber. They didn't have a security guard in there, I take it.
It doesn't say that, but...
Jeez. That's pretty risky, though, for the manager.
Oh, yeah.
Because, number one, what they always say, let them take the money. The bank's insured. You know, don't confront them. Somebody could get shot.
He might have had a good opportunity and took it.
Yeah, but let him go. You catch him later. You get their pictures on video. Everybody knows who everybody is now.
But you're never there. I mean, he could have his back to him. There could have been a lot of things.
My point is that if you're going to pull a gun like that, it's very dangerous. People could have been shot, innocent people. Let him go.
If a guy was robbing a bank and you were in there.
If you're running a store, some guy comes in with a gun and says, you know, give me the money. Open it up, give him the money, and wish him well.
I agree. But if he turns his back on you, jump on him.
No. What do you mean turn his back
on? Well, because we don't know. We weren't in there, so we don't know what the circumstances were.
And what if he's got another guy in there hiding or something?
Then you're in trouble.
You know. Okay, thanks, Tom. Next up, Barbara, Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. Hey, Barb, what's up?
Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Well, I had a weird occurrence. I was eating with a friend at a restaurant, and I ordered a bowl of soup, and the bowl of soup started moving across the table, and I hadn't touched it, and she hadn't touched it, and the table was level.
Really?
Yeah, it started moving, and she saw it. And she didn't know what to make of it.
Sometimes liquid forms under the base of a cup or a bowl. It could be, was a soup hot?
Yeah.
Sometimes you get a little steamy and that kind of like, it's you know, it's like you fishtail, and the cars do that in the rain sometimes. You swerve because it's almost like an ice effect, and you just float away, and it doesn't take much to push it, but... Who knows? Maybe it was a ghost.
It was kind of interesting.
Would you have had dinner with a ghost, Barbara?
Well, sure. Why not?
As long as they're paying, right?
Yeah.
All right. That's the way to do it. We've got Jack in Alberta, Canada now. Hey, Jack, International Line. Thank you for calling, Jack.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Wonderful. Thanks.
Wonderful. Hey, man, I got a couple of things for you.
Sure.
First off, I'm wondering when you guys are going to finally make it up to Edmonton, Alberta.
Well, we've come close. Let's turn Tom's mic. Mike, can we turn your mic on, Tom? Let's get it on because you're the holder of the keys of our trips. Edmonton.
Canada.
We've been to Vancouver a couple times.
New. It's been open less than a year. It holds 18,500 seats.
Wow.
We are open to Canada. The little issue is it's harder to pay bills, transfer money, things like that. We can do it. It just takes a little bit more effort.
Well, don't forget, it's 30 cents on the dollar cheaper up
That's
here.
True. And Jack, my daughter's engaged to a guy from Alberta.
That was my next question. Is she married yet?
Nope, they're not married. They're not married
It's
yet.
Not out of the question, Jack.
I'm really hearing about that.
And by the way, I did tell her before she sets a wedding date, she needs to check with me to make sure I can make it.
That would be a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom's got me all over the country next year. She's got to check in with me first and set the date.
If there's any way that I can be in attendance, I will certainly be there. It's only an hour's drive from here.
That's so. Not bad. You're not a priest or a minister or anything,
no,
are you?
No, heavens no, but you know what? We can actually be ordained here in Alberta. So.
Oh, really?
Yep. It's takes like 2 days. It's very simple to do.
It gets cold up there in the winter, doesn't it?
Yeah, but come up during the summer. We get 70, 80 degrees Fahrenheit. So you'll like that.
Are you a hockey fan?
Somewhat. Actually, I have actually been to the same venue that Wayne Gretzky was married in.
Edmonton Oilers, right?
Yep, that's right, Edmonton Oilers. Now, hey, listen, I got something else I wanted to bring to your attention, something that, George, you and I talked about a long time ago, and I wanted to remind everybody that something I saw that very rarely get seen, and that was back in 1983. I'm using my own name now because I've since retired, and I was working in a mental hospital and saw actually a patient standing sideways on the wall.
Jeez. It does happen.
Yep, it does, and scared the never-loving bejesus out of me. Mark Leslie was listening that night, and I'm actually in his book about that.
Super. Jack, hold on, because Tom wants to talk with you about that Edmonton venue and see where it is. 18,000 people. That would be fun. Pat in Minneapolis, welcome to the show. Hey, Pat, go ahead.
I have a feeling you and your mom are as cute as when Dave Letterman used to tease his mom about being a Midwesterner who would say Italian instead of Italian. Anyway, I wanted to apologize for misspeaking the Bible on your show one time.
What did you say?
Well, King Solomon did not pray for wisdom. God, in a dream, asked King Solomon what he wanted. That's not the same as praying.
Ah. Okay.
Completely different, and I misspoke terribly.
Nobody caught that, Pat.
Do you think I should join Pope Frank's apology tour?
Yeah, why not?
It's not going very well.
No. It's a tough sell for him.
Well, anyway, we can pray for him too, can't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Okay, thanks, Pat.
Bye-bye.
Next up, Annie in Alabama. Hello, Annie. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you, George. There's one thing I couldn't believe.
What's
and
that?
I have a solution for this. I've come up with a way to get around pagination of a little small story that takes 50 pages because they only give one line per page and you have to click and click, and that costs you for 50 times as many megabytes. This is robbing people, and I came up with a way around it.
Well, how do you do that?
Okay, you open a new window and you go to Google. You Google the same headline and you find it on a whole lot of other websites. And a lot of websites have it all on one page.
How do you come up with this stuff, Annie?
Well, I guess people say I'm a natural. I don't know. I just
No, you're pretty good at that. You're pretty good at that indeed. Let's go to PJ in Denver, Colorado, west of the Rockies. PJ, welcome to the show.
Hey, George. I've been listening to you since the very beginning. Even heard some shows from Art also.
Thank you.
I'm trying to keep positive. I have a bit of bad news. I've been a realtor since 1984, and unfortunately, I have 85% organ loss. My kidneys are going out on me.
Oh.
And I'm eligible for dialysis. But don't be sad, you know. Be happy because I've done a lot of good things in my life, and I want to continue to do some good things. So first of all, I'd like to Ask you next time you do a national prayer if you'll remember Peter James.
You're in it. We do it on Fridays, and we're doing it today, so I'm putting you on the list right after the show.
Wonderful. And then just another thing, too, is that I'd like to get I'm a realtor, and because I'm a realtor, all my personal information is out under the Colorado State Government and the Real Estate Department. And if somebody's out there and interested in giving me a kidney, you can't buy a kidney, but I've been a realtor since 1984, and I help people pass the real estate exam for free here in the Denver area, and I'd be willing to move once I'm given a lease on life to whatever city they're at and help them pass that real estate.
So how many kidneys? You need one, just one?
I just need one to give me some life. I have about 6 to 18 months left, but I'm being positive. I'm helping people like I've always helped. And if somebody's out there and they can call, since I'm a realtor, my information's out there. Could I give my post office?
Yeah, to get a kidney, go ahead. Give it out.
Oh, okay. You can write to Peter James, and it's P.O. Box 44055. Denver, Colorado, 80201.
And if they Google your name,
go to the real estate department, they can get more information there, because you have to be transparent. So I just really love your show. This is the first time I've ever called, and I'm just going to continue. I want to listen to it for 10 more years. If there's somebody that can help me, say a prayer for me.
And Peter, let me ask you, I assume they have to be compatible with you, right?
You know what? You're 100% right. In fact, I've had two people offer me a kidney, and one was an elderly woman in her 70s, and she was Rh negative, and the other one was not compatible because she had an illness herself. But I know kidneys out there, so I'm positive. And someone's out there, and I'm going to help them with a career if they let me.
Do they have to have the same blood type as you in order for the kidney to be compatible? I don't know how that works.
Well, you know what, George? I've only been diagnosed within the last 3 weeks. I'm going to the University of Colorado Medical Center for my first transplant appointment on October 19th, so I'll be learning all that. But I have to say, yes, I'm a type O. But I think there's ways in there if somebody does not have the right. They do like a banking system on a national level. I don't know how it works, but prayers and an offer's out there. I promise I'll do my best to whatever to help them out with career. And anyway, if not, George, I just love your show. You do so good for so many people, and I've listened to you so many nights, and I am very positive, and I'll continue to be till my last breath, and thank God.
Thank you, Patrick. It's Patrick James. They can Google your name in Denver and maybe find you that way, too.
Yes, sir. Peter James.
Peter. Okay, great. Thanks, Peter. I hope it works out for you. Somebody want to give up a kidney for Peter? Maybe you can if you're compatible with him. And I think you have to have the same blood type, which makes everything compatible, I think. Don't hold me to that. Next up, let us go. Whose turn is it in the time we have left? Carol in Port Huron, Michigan, first-time caller. Got a little bit of time. Go ahead, Carol.
Hi, George. Just wanted to tell you I love your show. And when I was growing up, we had Top Value gift stamps.
I remember that.
Yeah, from the kind of Detroit area.
Yep.
And also Liggett and Myers were some of the coupons in some cigarette cartons, too. So that plus Brown and Williamson got a lot of gifts.
And you know what? Our parents loved those things, didn't they?
Yeah, well, my father-in-law had a cigarette company.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so we were fortunate to get a lot of extra stamps.
I remember on TV shows that the host would sometimes walk out with a cigarette. Boy, times have changed now. But, yeah, they would just literally be smoking on the TV set in front of a live audience. They didn't tape many things in those days. I don't even think they knew how. They didn't have the capability. But the audiences were live, and they were always smoking away. We got to do a nostalgia show one day. I'm going to come back in a moment. William Henry's joining us to talk about the Watchers. We'll be back. Lisa Garr manning the desk tomorrow. Jimmy Church on Sunday. I'll be back on Monday out of St. Louis, the cave, during the holidays. Can't believe it. But that's where I'll be. The Watchers, are they evil? Why are they here, and what do they mean to all of us? I had a chance to speak with mythologist William Henry to get the answers. And as you well know, William Henry is an investigative mythologist, author of a number of books and DVDs. His latest, The Watchers, Lost Secrets of Ascension, Resurrection, and Perfection. William, welcome back. How are you?
I'm wonderful, George. Thank you so much for having me on the show again tonight.
Any traveling?
I've been in Connecticut. I was in L.A. On Monday doing some new interviews for Ancient Aliens. Really excited about that.
Good for you. Should have looked this up while you were here.
Well, it was such a fast track. And so I just there overnight. And on a personal note, I had a sick cat who passed away yesterday. So it was kind of a really emotionally very, very difficult time. He was my beloved buddy. And he's on his journey now.
How old was he?
He was 11.
Now, that's not too old for a cat, is it?
No, it's not. It was sad. I was really hoping he'd be here a few more years, and but his time was—it was time for him to go, sadly, and going to miss him dearly.
Well, he's out there somewhere. You know that.
He's here with us now.
Yep, absolutely. Tell me about the Watchers.
The Watchers, incredible story, very controversial, of course. There's a broad range of viewpoints on the Watchers, ranging from they're demons, they're evil, they're controlling us. People want to know why are they here and what are they doing? Why are they interfering with humanity? And people actually blame the Watchers for humanity's ills. And that's one very definite point of view. But then the other point of view is that they were here. They came from the heavenly realm, from the realm called Sion, according to the Bible, the location of God's throne. They're dispatched to earth in order to bring a new teaching to humanity, a teaching about how humans can transform into angels and make the journey from the earthly realm to the heavenly realm of Sion. And it seems that what's happened in the intervening centuries, and by the way, the Watchers were briefly mentioned in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, and then it's the Essenes, about 150 years before Jesus, all of a sudden there's this rise of astounding what's known as apocalyptic material developed by the Essenes. Apocalyptic simply means that a human man is in contact with an otherworldly being, a supernatural being, an angelic being, maybe even an extraterrestrial in some people's view, who delivers knowledge about another supernatural world. And this then became an explosion of knowledge about the Watchers and the ability of humans to cross over what the church considers a forbidden boundary between flesh and light, between spirit and flesh.
Now, the Essenes, did they not write the Dead Sea Scrolls as well?
That's exactly right. The Essenes, there's no question that after the destruction of the Temple of Solomon in AD 70, when the Essenes were attacked, the Roman army came into Jerusalem, into Galilee. The Essenes bundled up their sacred texts, which there were many, hid them in caves, and they were lost until 1947 when they were rediscovered. And this is when modern consciousness really begins to understand the full story of the Watchers.
The Watchers, are they angelic? What realm are they from?
Two schools of thought. There's some that believe that they're simply and only human beings, ancient pagan royalty who existed maybe going back to the time even before the flood, and that they were able to survive the flood and then continued with new bloodlines after the time of the flood. The second viewpoint is that they are, and this comes from the Bible as well as the Dead Sea Scrolls, that they are celestial beings, light beings, ephemeral beings who had the ability to phase into physical manifestation. They could take flesh and blood bodies and phase back and forth, by the way, between flesh and blood and their light being status, and then infiltrated human affairs.
That sounds angelic to me, William.
They are, and this is where it gets kind of disturbing, because as you begin to research the Watchers, you're presented with a crossroads. You're either going to take the tack that they're purely evil and they're demonic, as many people do, And if you take that path, it's going to lead you down to the path where you're following their offspring, who are called the Nephilim, as these giant beings with elongated skulls and this whole axis of research, which is very interesting. But if you're following that path, chances are you are not probing deeply behind the text and into the text left by the Essenes, and you're realizing that the Essenes themselves were utilizing ancient texts and teachings that they had developed and synthesized from ancient Babylon, Egypt, Iran, Iraq, the teachings of Pythagoras, that were centered on how do we contact the Watchers, one, and two, how do we transform ourselves into angels? And in fact, this is what the Dead Sea Scrolls are all about, is this Essene, this group of Essenes, Jewish mystics, 150 years before the time of Jesus, who were utilizing these teachings to congregate with the angels, the holy ones, the angels of the Lord, the Watchers, and were transforming their bodies into light. In other words, into angels.
The Nephilim, which, of course, in the book of Genesis, to me, they're fallen angels. I'm not sure. What do you think?
I don't think so, because when you look at the etymology of the meaning of the word Nephilim, it's far, far from established fact. The term fallen angel means that they are evil beings or that they are beings who are somehow demonic. They're fallen because they came out of the higher vibrational, if you will, heavenly realms and took human bodies. That is their great sin. They crossed what the church establishment views as a forbidden boundary. You're not allowed to cross over from flesh into spirit without God's permission. And this is the whole crux of the question. Did the Watchers, when they descended from the heavenly realms and took on physicality, did against the will of God? And that's going to determine your whole viewpoint about the Watchers. And what happened was is that early church fathers, based on some of the work of the Essenes and others, simply decided that they were demonic beings, that they were powers that were beyond human control, and certain humans began teaching that we need to avoid the Watchers at all costs. Do not seek to transform yourself into an angel without God's permission, because in order to actually, what the church terms as ascend or experience the rapture, you have to be invited by God. And that's the great crossing line that the Watchers transcended or crossed over and came to teach humans how to do, how to turn into angels.
William, in your book, The Watchers, you do talk about a luminous cloud where gods rode on them. To me, it sounds like Ezekiel's wheel. It sounds kind of UFO-ish, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, in the New Testament, the Greek word for clouds is nephil, which is the word where we get the word Nephilim from. And so these are cloud riders. And when you, as I did in my book, in the Watchers book, I collected various examples of Judeo-Christian art that shows the Watchers, including Jesus, riding upon cloud vehicles, luminous clouds. They're literally levitating on these clouds. And what we learn is that this cloud is actually a symbol for their ascension body, their light body. It's not a hardware UFO like a flying Toyota. It's actually an organic light vehicle that is produced by the human body, and it enables them to travel interdimensionally and throughout the cosmos.
Talking with William Henry, his latest work, The Watchers, and of course we're going to get into many things that he, as an investigative mythologist, goes after. These gods that visited us, spiritual or physical?
Spiritual first, who had the ability to phase into physicality, and their bodies are described actually as fluid. They can virtually instantly, according to these stories, transform from their aqueous, adaptable kind of fluid shape into physicality. They can even turn invisible. And this is what we discover in some of the Gnostic texts as well as in the Dead Sea Scrolls, where they're describing looking at these luminous beings who are radiating rainbow light, who their bodies are described as full of eyes, they're covered with feathers, and they have serpentine-type faces. And when you add all this description together, it precisely matches what the Tibetans describe as the rainbow body of light. In the Tibetan Great Perfection tradition, they believe that humans can morph into a light body that they describe. That what they tell us is that our body, the frequency of our body can be accelerated until it dissolves into five-colored rainbow light, leaving behind only hair, toe, and fingernails that have no nerves to be transmuted. The Watchers could do this, and I believe that the Tibetan Great Perfection tradition originates with the Watchers. And so these Watchers could step down their frequency in a way, enter into the earth plane, tune or tone down their frequency, manifest in physical form, and then phase back into their non-physical light being form.
Wow. What did they want, William? Was there an agenda?
In my view, when you follow the ascension path of the Watchers, that they were here, they came here on a rescue mission. They are the Anunnaki, by the way. They were not here for gold. That is Zechariah Sitchin's personal take on the ancient
Sumerian
text.
Right, that was his theory.
The texts never say the Anunnaki came here for gold. That was Sitchin's surmise, his conclusion. They came here, according to these texts, in order to reconnect Earth to a cosmic conduit that links Earth with the heavenly realm, specifically with the throne that they refer to as Sion, a place of peace. That is their mission. And along the way, they brought with them their ascension teachings. The Dead Sea Scrolls are very clear that some of the Watchers brought various crafts and technologies with them. They clearly taught humankind how to use various tools and other implements. But along the way, they also, and this is a big beef that the church has with the Watchers, they taught the secrets of heaven. And the secrets of heaven are how humans can transform into angels, ride the cosmic conduit, and dwell at God's throne. And that's the really big question right there, George. Why would the church have a problem with this? Why does the establishment church have a problem with a group of beings coming to earth and teaching humans to become angels?
You would think they would welcome it.
You would think they would welcome it. The problem is that you cut out the church in this scenario. You have no need for the popes and the priests and the whole church establishment, because, in fact, the church doesn't teach humans.
Right.
To become.
You can do it on your own, right?
You can do it on your own. And that is the big question. Can humans take it upon themselves to perfect themselves, is the term, to become more whole, to become more holy, to become more complete? If you answer no, then chase them as demons, chase them as giants. If you answer yes, then you're getting into the innermost esoteric secrets, the most closely guarded secrets of all humankind, the secrets that they, whatever government or New World Order type authority you subscribe to, these are the secrets they do not want you to know about. These are the secrets of the Illuminati, ultimately.
Well, you mentioned something, too. Is there any evil at all connected with the Watchers?
Well, there is in perception. I mean, the Essenes were absolutely clear in their writings that there are two currents or forces of the Watchers. One was represented by the Archangel Michael, who's also sometimes referred to as Melchizedek, who established a priesthood of which Jesus was a member. The other current or force is led by Belial, who is referred to later as the Antichrist. And they were of the belief that these two forces or currents are active in our consciousness at all times. This is kind of the Christian concept of the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. And it was all about harmonizing these forces and recognizing that through the power of our own consciousness and our own thoughts, we can actually become angels.
It's an amazing possibility. How did you uncover this?
I've actually been on the trail of the Watchers for some time. I mean, I've been, of course, on the Anunnaki trail for 15 years or so. And then I started researching the Seraphim several years ago. These are the highest order of angels.
Mm-hmm.
They watch or guard God's throne. And in fact, during the Renaissance, a belief was developed that the Seraphim were actually humans who had transformed themselves into angels or perfected themselves. That the book of Hebrews describes the heavenly throne of God, referred to as Zion, and they tell us that it's inhabited. It's inhabited by joyful angels and the angels of the Lord, the watchers, and just humans made perfect. And I'm reading this, I'm going, well, who are these people? What did they know? How did they perfect themselves? How did they get to turn into angels and go and dwell in God's throne? And can I? How can I? And that's what started me on this real path of trying to uncover the secrets of the watchers.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. In the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century, your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.